feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. What do you really want? In the deepest part of your soul, what do you desire? In our study today in 2 Samuel chapter 6, we will take a look at what our heart really desires. Most people don't recognize the real desire of their heart. Because of this, we try to satisfy our desire with all the wrong things. Let's join Pastor John for our study and see the real object of our desire and how we should go about properly obtaining it.
2 Samuel chapter 6. David has just become the king of the entire country. He has ascended to the throne. He is the king of the nation of Israel. And in this story, we see one of the first acts that he did as king of the entire country. David desired for the people that he was ruling over, for the people of that nation, that they would experience what David experiences. That is, David had a love for God, an intimacy with God. He experienced in his life the glory of God. And David wanted all of the nation, particularly those in that capital city, Jerusalem, to experience the glory of God. Now, what is the glory of God? The Hebrew word for glory is kabod, C-H-A-B-O-D. It means literally weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, like heavy. We used to say that back in the 60s, heavy, man. It means it's something that has substance or weight, unlike, let's say, cotton candy. Now, cotton candy, you know, it looks nice, it's pink, and it tastes sweet, but there's nothing really there. It's just pink air. There's no there. Cotton candy is trivial and frivolous compared to a juicy top sirloin, you see. That's glory. That's weight. That's kabod. And the kabod of God is that weight that every person in their heart is craving. Every person on the planet is desiring, whether they realize it or not. Whether they can articulate it or not, the fact of the matter is, everybody is desiring the glory, the weight, something heavy, something substantial. Pascal put it this way, there is a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of every man that cannot be satisfied by anything but God. That is, there's a hole in the heart of everybody. And you can try and fill that hole with material toys or sex or drugs or rock and roll or success on the job or family, whatever it might be. But nothing will satisfy that God-shaped vacuum in the heart of everybody except God himself. Augustine put it this way. Our hearts are restless until they find their rest in thee, O Lord. Our hearts are restless. There's a hole in our soul that can't be satisfied by anything but God, and we'll have no rest until we are linked to God. Now, Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, when they were walking with the Lord in the cool of the day, they were surrounded by the kabod, the glory of God. When they sinned, when they ate of the forbidden fruit, the kabod, the glory, left, departed. Ichabod, that is, the departing of the glory. And suddenly they knew, hey, we're naked. And they sought to cover up their emptiness, their nakedness, with fig leaves. Go figure. I mean, that's not a very good cover, but that's the best they could do. And since Adam blew it, since he bombed out the Adam bomb there in the Garden of Eden, which we're still experiencing the fallout of today, since Adam blew it then, people have been on a quest to fix it, to cover themselves, and they use fig leaves, dumb things that don't work, until a man, a woman, a person gets right with God, is filled with God, and suddenly they experience the kabod, the glory. Now, David knew this. David was a lover of the Lord. He had a close walk with the Lord, and he desired now that the people in his nation and the people there at Jerusalem experience the kabod, the glory. In Old Testament times, the glory of God, the kabod, was directly linked to the Ark of the Covenant. Now, you know what the Ark is. It's that box, 2 feet by 3 feet approximately, in which was the Ten Commandments. It was covered with the lid, and the lid was called the mercy seat. On the mercy seat were two golden cherubims, or two golden angels. It was on the mercy seat. It was at the mercy seat, the lid that covered the box, the Ark, that God said, "There I will meet with you." And the glory of God dwelt between the cherubims, above the mercy seat, right there, linked with the Ark. The glory of God, it was tangible, it was visible. You could actually see it. It was called the Shekinah glory, the kabod of God. One day each year, the high priest could go into the Holy of Holies, and he could see the tangible, visible presence of God's glory hovering over the Ark, linked with the Ark there at the mercy seat. David knew this. David wanted the Ark of the Covenant to be brought to Jerusalem. Why? So the people of Jerusalem, the people in that nation, could experience the glory, the kabod of God. The problem is, the Ark, you see, wasn't at Jerusalem. The Ark was at a place called Kirjath-Jearim, about 13 miles away or so. David desires to bring it back to Jerusalem. The question that you might ask is, well, what's the Ark doing there at Kirjath-Jearim? Well, on that hangs a tale. Years previously, when the people of Israel were fighting the Philistines, their perpetual enemy, they were getting their clock cleaned. Somebody had the bright idea, hey, let's bring the Ark into the next battle, and the Ark will give us victory. They were treating the Ark like a rabbit's foot, like a good luck charm. I could never figure out why people use rabbit's feet for good luck charms. The rabbit's foot wasn't good luck for that rabbit. That rabbit's dead. He got defeated, literally. But be that as it may, somebody had the bright idea that day, let's bring in the Ark, you see, and that will give us victory. Not the Lord will give us victory, but it will give us victory. And so they called for the Ark, and they looked to it, not to him, but to it. And God allowed them, the Israelites, to be defeated once again. The Philistines won the war, and they captured the Ark in the process. Well, they took the Ark into their temple to their god, a god by the name of Dagon. Now, Dagon, as perhaps you can recall, was the Philistine god. He was half fish, half man. He had the body of a fish and the top, the torso, the head of a man. They put the Ark in to the temple of Dagon, next to Dagon. The next day, when the priests walked in, their idol, Dagon, had fallen on its face before the Ark that was there, you see. Their god would say, "Help, I've fallen and I can't get up." And those priests, you know, you would think that they would say, "Something's fishy going on here. I mean, here's our god on the floor." But they gave their god a hand and stood him up again. And the next day, much to their shock and chagrin, when they went back in, Dagon was on the floor once more. Only this time, Dagon's head and his hands were cut off. They walked in and said, "Dagon it. And what are we going to do here? I mean, here's our god on the floor, headless and handless and hopeless. Hey, we got to do something. One of these gods has got to go." So they put the Ark of God on a cart, and they sent it back to Israel. dumb thing to do, but that's what they chose to. They sent the true and living God, if you would, the Ark of Yahweh, back to Israel that day. Well, on the cart, the Ark sat, making its way to Israel. When it gets across the border there at Beth Shemesh, the Israelites are so glad to see the Ark, they want to make sure everything's intact. They lift off the mercy seat. They look in to see if the Ten Commandments are still there, and the Ten Commandments were. But the problem was, by removing the mercy seat, the place of mercy, and looking at the law, it took a real toll. 50,070 men there at Beth Shemesh were killed because the law kills. You take away mercy and you die, and the people around you do too. You gotta have mercy in the equation. Not just the law, not judgment, but mercy and compassion. Hey, keep a lid on it. The thoughts of judgment and condemnation, mercy is the key. Well, at that point, the Ark of the Covenant is like a hot potato. It's too hot to handle, and they just keep it right there in somebody's house. It ends up in the house, well, there at Kirjath Jearim, where it's been sitting for many years. Now, David, he's the king of the land, and he says, we're going to go and get that Ark that we might experience the kabod, the glory, here in Jerusalem. Good idea, David. Watch and see what happens. Here in verse 1, again, David gathered together all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000 in number. How are we going to get the Ark to bring the glory of God into this city? I know, David said, we'll have a big parade. 30,000 chosen men. That'll do it. That's what people today say. How are we going to see the glory of God in this church, in our family, in my heart, in the ministry? I know, we'll have a big parade. That's the key. 30,000 choice men, like promise keepers. They gathered together, if you would, a stadium full of people. Tambo and I were in San Francisco a couple years ago. There at Fisherman's Wharf, we saw a couple of guys walking down the wharf. One of the guys had a t-shirt that simply said, my wife thinks I'm a promise keepers. But be that as it may, a lot of people, sorry about that, but a lot of people say, hey, if we can just have a big rally or a big crusade or whatever it might be, hey, we can usher in the glory of God. That's the key, to bring the kabod of God, the glory of God. We'll get 30,000 choice men, great guys. I like this. I think this way. I can understand that mentality. So David arose, verse 2, and went with all the people, these 30,000 men. 30,000. See that in your mind's eye. Picture that. That's quite a parade. 30,000 choice men following David that day. And they went with David from Baali of Judah. Now, Baali is another name for Kirjath-Jearim. It was called Baali because years before, Baal, the false god, was worshipped there. So it's the same place, Kirjath-Jearim or Baali, same city. David takes 30,000 men, a big parade, and they go to Baali to bring up from thence the Ark of God, whose name is called by the name of the Lord of hosts, who dwells between the cherubims, or the angels that sit on the lid, the mercy seat that's over the Ark. 30,000 guys, we're going to go get the Ark and bring it back to the city. And we read, they set, verse 3, the Ark of God upon a new cart. 30,000 men to bring in the glory of God, and they put it on a new cart. Now, in reality, what is a cart? It's nothing more actually than boards and big wheels. And I like the analogy because we think in ministry, we think in service, we want to see God's glory in this place. Hey, let's have a great big 30,000 people mass meeting. We'll have a board meeting. We'll bring in big wheels. That's how we're going to see the glory of God, you see. A great program. We'll get a good board, big wheels, lots of people. Hey, hey, hey. We're going to see the glory of God, the moving of the Spirit. That's what David thought that day. I think that way. I can see this. Big parade, board meeting, big wheels, and all the rest. And they brought the Ark, verse 3 says, out of the house of Abinadab, where it sat, and Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drave the new cart. They brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was at Gibeah, accompanying the ark of God, and Ahio, verse 4, last phrase, went before the ark. Now check this out. This gets better. 30,000 men, boards and big wheels, big parade, hype and hoopla, you see. And not only that, but the guy that was steering the cart, his name was Uzzah. His name means strength. The guy that holds the reins, that's steering the ship, he's a strong guy. And the guy that was out in front of the ark, leading the way, Ahio, his name means friendly. I mean, is this perfect or what? You have Mr. Strong driving the cart, Mr. Friendly out in front, slapping backs and passing out bulletins and high fives. I mean, this is great, I would think. This is the way church should be. This is the way that we ought to be to see God's glory brought in. Yeah, I like this. So it's all set up. They took the ark, Mr. Strong driving the cart, Mr. Friendly out in front. And besides that, it gets better still. David, verse 5, and all his house, all the house of Israel, played before the Lord on all manner of instruments made of fir wood. That is, harps, psalteries, timbrels or tambourines, coronets. By the way, Bible students, note that. Coronet should be castanet. The old King James word coronet means castanet today. And cymbals. All of these instruments, guitars, tambourines, castanets, they're all played with the hand. Make note of that. It's a hands-on experience. They can handle it, you see. The parade, boards, big wheels, hoopla, hype. A grand program. Churches do this. It can happen to you. It can happen to me. This is the way to see God's glory ushered in today. Instruments, guitars, castanets, tambourines, cymbals, and all the rest. And then, with this spectacular crusade, this glorious parade making its way to Jerusalem, the plot thickens. Because then, verse 6, when they came to Nacon's threshing floor, Uzzah, Mr. Strong, put forth his hand to the ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen shook it, or stumbled, as your margin says. They make their way. The cart is rolling along. Mr. Friendly's out in front. The guys are playing their guitars. I mean, it's really cooking. It's really happening. Everybody's impressed when suddenly they come to the threshing floor. Note that. Nacon's threshing floor. The word Nacon means established. That's what his name means. A threshing floor is what? A place where the wheat and the chaff are separated. It's the place where you, in Bible days, would bring your wheat after it was harvested. You would throw it up in the air with a pitchfork to let the wind winnow the wheat from the chaff. The good stuff, the wheat, would fall to the ground. The chaff would be blown away. It was the separation of the trivial from reality, of the frivolous from the meat, you see. And when they came to the threshing floor, and this what happens to me, it's what happens to you, it's what happens to us. When we have our parades, our programs, our big ideas, our grand plans and great designs, you see, we're on our way. Our parade is moving along. Suddenly, ba-boom, we hit a bump. It's important. It's a God thing. Ba-boom. All of a sudden, ba-boom, we're at the threshing floor. Ba-boom, where God is saying, I'm separating the substance from the trivial, the reality from the frivolous, at the threshing floor. I know, Johnny, you feel like you're being threshed, but in reality, it's me. I'm separating that which is of me versus that which is simply you in your energy. They hit the bump. And when they hit the bump, bump, the ark on the cart begins to teeter and totter. No problem, Mr. Uzzah, Mr. Strong Guy. He reaches back to do what? To stabilize the ark, to give God a hand. No problem, so we hit a bump. I can solve it, Uzzah said that day. I'm Mr. Strong. I'm a can-do kind of guy. If it's to be, it's up to me. You can count on me, Uzzah would say. He reaches back to stabilize the ark, to give God a hand, to help God out. I've been here. You have too, perhaps, in our attempts, our programs, our vision, our hype, our efforts. We say, I've got my parade going, and you hit a bump. That's okay. I can solve the problem. He reaches back to give God a hand, something that he ought not to do. No one was to touch the ark in this way. And what happened was, the anger, verse 7, of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, Mr. Strong, and God smote him there for his error, and he died by the ark of God. Boy, talk about raining on your parade. Talk about quenching the party. Suddenly, all 30,000 guys stop. They turn their guitars off. Everybody is at a standstill. What? We were just parading, bringing back the glory of God, and now the strong guy has died. We hit a bump, and he was just trying to help out. What's going on? And David was ticked off. David was upset. David was really quite mad and very sad. David was displeased, verse 8 tells you and me, because the Lord had made a breach upon Uzzah, or the Lord took out Uzzah. Uzzah is dead, and David's upset. David called the name of that place Perez Uzzah, which is the breach or the felling, the falling of Uzzah. David called that place, oh, this is where Uzzah bit the dust. This is where Uzzah was taken out. This is where Uzzah was being judged. And David was upset. He was afraid, verse 9, of the Lord that day. Verse 9, this next phrase I have underlined. Perhaps you should too. Because this is the question for every parent, for every spouse, for every church, for every person, for every ministry. This is the key question. How, David said, shall the ark of the Lord come to me? If it's not by a big parade and boards and big wheels and hype and hoopla, Mr. Strong, Mr. Friendly, how shall the ark, the kabod of God, come to me? How's God's glory going to fill the house that I live in? How's God's glory going to be experienced by the kids that I'm raising? Or by my wife or my husband with whom I'm living? Or in the church that we're a part of? Or the ministry that you're involved in? Here is the key germane question. How then is the glory of God? How, David said, is the ark to come to me? He asks that question with a broken heart. And he was embittered of spirit as well, because his plans didn't work out. He thought he was doing something for God, but now he realizes it wasn't accepted by God. And he wonders, how does this work? David would not, verse 10, remove the ark of the Lord unto him. He left it right there. He carried it aside into the house of Obed-Edom.
David is perplexed and simply puts the ark of the Lord aside. What's going on? David thought he was doing such a great thing. He wanted the people to experience the glory of God. He wanted to bring the ark to Jerusalem to bless the people. But for some reason, God didn't like what was happening. As we continue this story on our next program, we will see what is happening. We will see how we bring the glory of God into our lives and the lives of our families. Please join us then as we conclude this very important teaching. We'll see you then. This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com.
We all go through challenging times in our lives, but we are not alone in these times. We have a faithful and loving God who walks with us day by day. To help us explore the faithfulness of God in these difficult times, Pastor John has made a book available called A Future and a Hope. In this book, John shares some of his personal experiences in dealing with tragedies, including the death of his young wife and later the death of his 16-year-old daughter. As John relates his own stories, we see a God who is faithful and compassionate at all times. A Future and Hope is especially comforting for those who are currently experiencing tragedy or loss in their life. If you would like this book for yourself or someone you know, you can order it from our website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.